Okay, my first slide is not here anymore. I'm going to talk about dyspnea as an endpoint. Then basically, I would like just to make sure that we are going to speak about the right clinical scenarios for dyspnea. There are two major types of acute heart failure, and you will see that in those two types, we are going to see how dyspnea is going to be measured. We have the first type that Frank just described. This is probably the clinical scenario of pronto dyspnea with elevated. I'm sure Mark will be happy to see elevated systolic blood pressure. He's so happy. Great. with patients coming with an acute dyspnea that comes here rather abruptly with a diffuse, spectacular pulmonary edema. And for years, we showed, and there are papers now rather clearly showing that here, the patients with a low ejection fraction are rather rare in this scenario, and we are more in patients with pulmonary edema, but a more preserved ejection fraction. And the other clinical scenario that is part of the trials we saw recently, and we heard about them today, is the frequent flyers, the decompensated chronic heart failure patients, either de novo or known as the chronic heart failure patients, where here, and Mihai was pointing out that dyspnea comes, in fact, 1-2 days, or even more, before being admitted in an emergency room or in cardiac ICU. Here, dyspnea is coming gradually together with an increase in body weight, together with many organ dysfunction. And as Mihai was pointing out, the dyspnea and the increase in body weight is, in fact, when the patient is admitted here in the emergency room, and if here we have on the x-axis the days before being admitted in the emergency room, you can see that the increase in body weight and likely dyspnea is present probably a week, several days, at least a week before admission in the emergency room. Now, as you know, dyspnea is an important endpoint for acute heart failure trials. First, because the agencies are pushing us for years, more than 10 years, 15 years now, to consider dyspnea or improvement in dyspnea as a primary endpoint. And until recently, for the two agencies, the European Agency and the FDA, improvement in dyspnea is a favorite primary objective, a primary endpoint in acute heart failure. However, until recently, acute heart failure patients were mostly included 24 to 48 hours after admission. But there are really no data, though the dyspnea is a favorite endpoint, there is no data to really assess the optimal tool. I just remind you, because this is a paper that is often described when we talk about dyspnea, the VMAC trial many years ago included patients 24 to 48 hours after admission. As you heard, there are patients with Swan-Ganz catheter. You see here nitroglycerin decreasing wedge pressure within the first 9 to 12 hours by 5 millimeters of mercury, and nisuretide had a greater decrease in the wedge pressure by minus 7 or minus 8 millimeters of mercury. And despite this deeper change and deeper improvement in wedge pressure, when they measured the dyspnea, we are going to see the scales in a minute, you can see here that nisuretide did better here at 3 hours, did better than the placebo arm. However, there are no difference between nisuretide and nitroglycerin, neither between nitroglycerin and placebo. And this is the 7-point ordinal scale used for the VMAC trial. Now, we led a trial, study with Mihai Georgiadi, where we try to understand how to measure dyspnea and try to see at least when a patient is admitted in acute condition, if we measure dyspnea within minutes of admission, what is the natural time course of dyspnea, and we measured by several tools dyspnea, and we try to see what is the optimal tool. Among the tools that we use, there is here the results of the 7-point Likert. Now, for the 7-point Likert, dyspnea is measured at only one time point, which is 6 hours, and we ask the patient how he feels compared to baseline. knowing that Likert's scale again is only measured after the event, after the admission. Then 6 hours after admission, we ask the patient whether he felt markedly worse, moderately worse, mildly worse, no change, mildly improved, moderately improved, or markedly improved. And as you can see here, the large majority of the patients improved after, at least felt improving after 6 hours. You see here 13% had no change and quite no patients felt worse. And if you look on the patients measured 6 hours, clearly 6 hours after admission, they almost all felt improved after admission. And then again, we are wondering who are the patients who become worse, at least those ones, are those who were included in trials where there is still dyspnea present after 6 to 12 hours. Maybe measuring VAS is even more spectacular than the main difference between Likert scale and VAS. VAS is measured at admission and is measured 6 hours later. Then it's a measure that is done at two different time points. At least here in our study, it could be measured indeed in different time points, but what is very important is here we measured at baseline being 30 minutes after admission, and in many trials I will show you that it is measured at the time of inclusion. Then again, if you measure the visual analog score, which is a scale of 100 millimeter, and you give the pen to the patient, and the patient put a cross on the line and between 0 and 100, and you take that point as the level of dyspnea at each time point. Then here again, when we go from 0, 1 being I have no dyspnea at all, and 10 my dyspnea is very, very horrible, you see here that at admission, more than 50% of the patient have a dyspnea higher than 40 millimeter. And here you have quite almost one-third of the patient that have a dyspnea between 0 and 40 millimeter of mercury. Then the dark black bars are the black bars at admission, and the gray bars are the bars 6 hours after admission. And incredibly enough, you can see here again that when we measure the visual analog score, very few patients kept being very dyspneic 6 hours after admission. There is quite no patients, or very few patients, higher than 70 millimeter of mercury. And likewise, you see here that the large majority of the patient, more than 50 to 60%, have a level of dyspnea below 30 millimeter of mercury 6 hours after admission. Then, using a standard of care today, 6 hours after admission, the large majority of the patient are either not dyspneic or have a very, very few signs of dyspnea measured by visual analog score. Interestingly enough, we could show in this paper, again, led by Mihai and myself, is that the visual analog score, and I think this is very important to understand, the time course of the visual analog score is related to the first initial baseline level of dyspnea. And I think this is very important to understand. The higher, it makes sense, but we need to know this for trials. The higher is the initial level of dyspnea, the higher is the VAS, the higher or the greater is the drop in dyspnea. You see here that in those patients coming with a high level of visual analog score, we have the greatest decrease in VAS. Now, this is very important because in a trial, when we are looking or targeting some level of dyspnea or improvement level of dyspnea of 20 or 30 millimeter of mercury, by definition, you need to have a patient coming with a high, very high level of dyspnea. This means that you are excluding a lot of patients by definitions. And again, that does not necessarily mean that your drug is working in all the patients. With Mihai, we also tried to be very clinically oriented, and we measured orthopnea, and it's interesting to see that in acute heart failure patients, here we have a high level of orthopnea, close to 70%. 6 hours later, you see that though visual analog score is in supine position, is going down, you see here that orthopnea is still very present, and we felt at that time that this is a very good way to still showing that this patient is in acute heart failure. In a later paper with Shin Collins, we can see that using several tools like visual anoxic score, the level of dyspnea at admission is different from a country to another. You see here in the U.S., again, we are talking about at admission, 30 minutes after admission, the average VAS is 40 millimeter in the U.S., and it's much higher in Western Europe and Eastern Europe. However, at 6 hours, you see that everybody is almost on the same level. Then I didn't go into details, but I can tell you that in that paper, we showed that visual anoxic score is much better than VMAC and Likert. And this has been, I think, confirmed in the trial I'm going to show you now. RELAX, if you remember, the time to drug was 7 hours. In the RELAX trial, they use the visual ALOX score from baseline to day 5, but they also use the Likert scale at 6 hours, 12 hours, 24 hours. You saw earlier the results of the VAS with the difference that start to appear probably at 24 hours after inclusion. I remind you that inclusion was 7 hours, and this difference was almost constant at day 5 with a difference around 10 millimeters. However, when one looks on the Likert scale, the difference is not so straightforward. Here it's difference between placebo and C-relaxing at 6 hours, 12 hours, 24 hours. Again, Likert scale, there is no measurement at baseline. You only come at 6 hours, 12 hours, and 24 hours, and you ask the patient whether he feels markedly improved until markedly worsen. And you see that at 6 hours, clear tendency at 12 hours and 24 hours. But again, the results on the Likert scale seems less straightforward than the visual analog score. In the PRONTO that you just heard from with Frank Peacock, there was a difference. There was a difference in the visual analog score. I'm not sure he mentioned that in the VMAC or in the Likert, there was also no statistically significant change. Then there are a couple of studies now showing clearly that VAS score, we can get a difference, we can extract a difference between a treatment group and the control group. However, this difference doesn't appear using the two other tools, which I believe make the VAS as really the optimal tool that we should use in the next trials. I would like to show you this data coming from our group. John was mentioning earlier a 3CPO trial where CPAP was used to be known as a reducing mechanical ventilation. The 3CPO trial in New England couldn't see a difference, and Mihai was mentioning that maybe at admission we are already late. And I would like to show you this paper that we published in Europe in Heart Journal, where we did CPAP not at admission in the hospital, but we did CPAP at home. This is the group of early CPAP, the ambulance, with the physician. We're going at home, putting a non-invasive ventilation at home, compared to the other group that received CPAP 15 minutes later, and 15 minutes later it was in the ambulance. That I believe it's some, I mean, we cannot do earlier than that. And again, you can see here the visual analog score. You see that giving the CPAP only 15 minutes, I mean, very, very early, which means at the time where the physician comes at home, you see that the visual analog score drop much earlier, and there is a marked decrease compared to the patient that received the CPAP later. At the end of the day, the group that received the CPAP later could achieve also a beneficial effect on dyspnea, but clearly, those who received CPAP at home had a much marked reduction in visual analog score. The reason why I'm putting all those trials one close to the other one is really to say that the time to the beginning of the treatment is maybe one of the clues in all those trials. And if we can, starting a trial as early as being at home, that could be just great. And the outcome was also better at home. In summary, I think there are now compelling data showing that the visual analog score is maybe the tool to measure dyspnea improvement in acute heart failure trial. And maybe looking on all the trials that measure dyspnea using the visual analog score, it seems that clearly the earlier the better. Thank you.
Alex, you raise a lot of important questions. One that comes to mind, and again comes back to the RELAX-HF trial, which is I think, so informative from a trialist standpoint about methodology right on the DSMI endpoint. So in RELAX-HF, we have no improvement really with the Likert scale. It's the results, as I look at them, are almost identical to the ASCEND dyspnea changes. We saw a very small signal, but we had 7,000 patients, so we had a p-value. Even that didn't meet our pre-specified criteria. And yet, in the RELAX, we see a late improvement in dyspnea. There's no real improvement, as you mentioned, in the first 6 or 12 hours with the VAS. And yet, Frank is telling us that that's where all the action is. You got to do it early. You're saying it's early. What is this late dyspnea improvement that we're seeing with this drug at 3 to 5 days?
Maybe Mike can comment first and then...
Well, I wasn't going to comment specifically on that, although I think it's... I mean, I think it points out what I said earlier, that the acute pulmonary edema patient that Frank is seeing in the ED and enrolling in Pronto, who's very hypertensive, is probably not exactly the same as... certainly very different than the 24, 48-hour patient, and maybe even different than the relaxed patient. There's a lot of overlap. I was going to ask you about this issue of provocative dyspnea assessment, because one of the things is there's a lot of patients on day 2, day 3 who have no dyspnea at rest, but they can't walk to the bathroom without getting very short of breath. So I think we tend to focus on symptoms at rest, which are obviously that's the low-hanging fruit, but there's this sort of subclinical persistent amount of symptoms that's not doesn't resolve in 6 or 12 hours. And I think that's one of the advantages of using scores that go out past the 24-hour mark.
No, I think you're asking a good question. First, I think we still have a problem with the tool that is measuring dyspnea. I think we learned a lot in the last trials, and I'm now a strong believer that VAS is probably the best, I would say maybe not the best tool that we may achieve in 10 years to measure dyspnea, or maybe dyspnea will totally disappear and the agency will come and say, okay, we are sorry, for 20 years we did a mistake. It's not dyspnea that we should measure something else. But at least, since they are trying to push and saying that dyspnea is important, I believe today VAS, at least, I think there are compelling evidence. Now it's very interesting, RELAX, that you see that the dyspnea, as you said, is increasing over time, and we feel that after 6 hours we have the maximum, or 12 hours we have maximum improvement, and it stays there. It's maybe related to several things, including that maybe that's not pure acute heart failure. We know that in many acute heart failure patients, we have a little bit of pulmonary infection. We have maybe other things that is also maybe improved over the first 24 hours. Maybe also because 7 hours is, I mean, I know we are, I'm going to be very provocative, but maybe 7 hours is still too late. And I mean, Mihai is right when he says that patients are dyspneic, at least the congestive heart failure patients are probably dyspneic 24 hours before being admitted, and maybe at admission we are still too late. But again, I like this way we see the improvement slowly in VAS, because it's going to help us thinking even more on those tools and what is dyspnea exactly.
Robert, and just introduce yourself for the...
So, Rob Hemmings, I work at the UK Licensing Authority, and I'm closely involved with EMA activities. So just wanted to pick up on the comment that the regulators have been asking us to use the wrong endpoints for years. And I'll say a few words about this if I get a chance during the discussion. And I'm certainly not going to say any words on behalf of FDA. But what I took from your presentation is that everyone's struggling with what endpoint to use. And I haven't heard from the presentation or from the discussion that there's a better alternative that everyone's agreed on. So I don't know how much is the regulators demanding X or that nobody has a better Y.
No, I think you're right. The problem is not so much the endpoint. It's an endpoint that has a tool that is perfect. And then I think the acute heart failure disease can disappear within minutes as soon as we have an endpoint with a very good tool. And many, I mean, I think you heard it for now several hours here in this meeting. We are all convinced that many drugs died just because we didn't know how to find the right endpoint and the right tool to show that those drugs are really working very well.
Frank, Illy, then John.
So, Alex, I'd ask you is... you're looking at the relaxin dyspnea improvement. Is 3 millimeters on a visual analog score count? Because, you know, I've been trying to figure out what is the significant number. And if you look at the relax data at the first day, it's 3 or 4 millimeters. And even by day 5, it looks like it's 10 millimeters. It's hard to read on the graph, but that's my guess. And we don't have any of this validated in heart failure. But the pain world has been doing this for a long time. And they've come up with a number of 13 millimeters is enough to say that if patient A says, I have X amount of pain, and patient B says Y, that they are truly different if they're 13 millimeters apart on the visual analytic score. But if they're less than that, then they're all the same. And that is the number that I have intended to apply to dyspnea, because dyspnea is like pain. It really is no fun, and patients hate it. And I think it is a valuable endpoint. But I think if you have a dyspnea score change of 7 millimeters, you don't have a dyspnea change at all. You have nothing.
To tell you the truth, I don't think the difference by millimeter means the same when you are 100 millimeter or 30 millimeter. And I think, to come back to a comment that Mike Felker was making earlier, I think we have the data to answer to that question. If we agree to put together 2 or 3 trials where we have the Likert and the VAS, but the Likert, we know exactly when the patient is improving by one step. He may say, I go from moderately to mildly, and we just have to see in VAS how much it makes, and then we can tell the community, hey guys, 15 or 17 or 20 is the right endpoint.
Yeah, I want to agree with my British colleague. I don't think the FDA is telling you that it's only dyspnea. I was there at that same meeting, and what I heard Norm Stockbridge said is, you tell us what you think is significant. So I think the regulatory agencies are waiting for us as a community to give a better tool, or to have a better assessment, or to have a better endpoint. And, you know, as you think about it, you can have a patient tell you that their, you know, VAS score has improved, but you get them out of bed and they can't go to the bathroom, and they can't walk, or they can't get out of bed or get into a chair. And to me, that is much more significant than this subjective, you know, sense of dyspnea.
Then I think we are going to do a trial with the endpoint being TTB, time to bath.
John, real quick.
Yeah, I was just saying, we've been looking at this in the UK National Audit, and now we've got 100,000 patients in there, and we were very surprised to find that, in fact, it's a minority of patients with a primary discharge diagnosis of heart failure who are acutely symptomatic at rest. We didn't believe the results, so we went back to audit the audit. And indeed, the audit's exactly right. It's only about 35 to 40% of these patients with a primary discharge diagnosis of heart failure where it's resting symptoms that are the problem. It is getting to the bathroom and lying flat are the problems.
I think maybe since we are still on dyspnea, maybe one way to move forward is maybe as experts, we push clinicians to use VAS. I mean, let's first decide. I mean, I showed you, I hope I convinced you that VAS is a good score. Then if all as a community we could accept that VAS is a good score, I think the way to move forward is to have every clinician using VAS at admission, at discharge, in the middle of hospitalization, like then exactly like blood pressure, we'll have a huge database, and really we can see whether it's a true endpoint or not. And I think at least in my point of view, this will be the step further, is to use it in the clinical practice.
We have a last question, but it's coming from Brazil. Our Brazilian colleagues are watching intently, maybe more intently than some of our colleagues around the table. John.
Mark, who said that Ileana was awake, then don't try to push further.
He'll always try to push
I
further.
Will. This is a really important question, though. It talks about the VAS. Does it need transcultural validation? And I think you have shown some of that data, and Mihai has shown some of that data, specifically when applied to Brazil or South America. But what about the influence of anxiety on the scale? And maybe...
I think, I didn't enter in detail. I had some slides that I removed. And I like exactly what Ileana, when she just woke up, said earlier. She just said, I know that one patient goes from the ambulance to the bed, already he's better. And it's true. I mean, dyspnea is multifactorial. And in the paper that we published with Mihai in European Heart Journal, you see that in patients that are not in acute heart failure, that are in the non-acute heart failure arm, you see also some improvement in dyspnea, then I totally agree. I mean, the improvement is, in dyspnea is multifactorial, is going to the bed, having the nurse, having oxygen, just oxygen, etc., etc. And but despite this, it's impressive to see that treatment arms can show a further decrease compared to standard of care. Then clearly there is a hope there. And there is no transnational, transcultural differences in the measures of VAS. I think the data are clear.
Well, I think this session could go on for many hours, and we still have some more.
No way. There's time limits.
Time paid. Fayez came in and said, he's the police. He said, we have to move on, and the chairman's done a bad job.